Welcome to another deep dive where we uncover fascinating insights from a stack of sources. And today we're going way back in time to January 1911.
Oh, wow. Over 100 years ago.
You got it. Our source material is a copy of The Crisis magazine.
Okay.
Edited by none other than W.E.B. Dubois.
Dubois, the sociologist, historian, and civil rights activist.
The one and only.
This is going to be fascinating.
He's a leading voice at the turn of the century, and this magazine gives us a glimpse into the social and political landscape for Black Americans back then.
A time capsule from a pivotal period in history.
You know it. So buckle up. We're about to unearth some incredible insight.
I'm ready. Let's dive in.
The Crisis starts with this section called Along the Color Line, which is basically a collection of news snippets and updates from Black communities all across the U.S.
Sort of like a series of snapshots of what daily life was like back then.
Yeah, exactly. Like little windows into their world.
What kind of stories are we talking about?
Well, some of them highlight everyday triumph, like the story of Eva B. Price.
Okay.
She worked at the census office, picture those old card punching machines, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Super tedious work. But she managed to achieve the highest score ever recorded, outperforming all of her colleagues, including those who doubted her abilities.
That's amazing. A true testament to her skill and determination.
Right. And speaking of determination, other stories shed light on the stark inequalities of the time. In Louisiana, for example, Black teachers earned drastically lower salaries than their white counterparts. We're talking an average of $34 a month for Black men.
Wow.
Compared to $75 for white men doing the same job.
That's a huge disparity. A blatant example of the systemic discrimination that was so pervasive back then.
And it wasn't just salaries. In many places, Black schools had shorter terms, fewer resources, and way lower enrollment rates for Black children.
It sounds like they faced an uphill battle on multiple fronts. Were there any stories about their economic challenges?
Absolutely. There's this story about Black freedmen in Oklahoma.
Okay.
After the Civil War, they were given land, but then forced to purchase it within a limited time at a fraction of its actual value.
So they were set up to fail from the start.
Pretty much many lost their land, unable to overcome this deliberately rigged system.
A classic case of offering a solution that's designed to fail.
It's a pattern we see repeated throughout history.
Did they encounter other legal barriers as well?
Oh, yeah. It seemed like every step forward was met with resistance. Take Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
There was a legal battle raging over deed restrictions that specifically barred selling property to Black people.
Imagine being told you can't buy a home simply because of your race.
It's mind-boggling. And this is just a few examples. Along the Color Line also covers things like poll tax initiatives, the formation of Black business leagues, even the construction of new churches.
It sounds like a vibrant community finding ways to thrive despite the obstacles.
It really does. It gives you a sense of the invisible walls they had to overcome just to live their lives.
But what about the bigger picture? What were the major national conversations happening at the time?
Alongside these glimpses of daily life, The Crisis tackles some pretty big issues in its opinion section.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
And one of the most significant debates revolves around something called the Appeal to Europe.
Appeal to Europe. Now that sounds interesting. What exactly was that about?
It was a statement written and signed by 32 prominent Black Americans, intellectuals, activists, professionals, challenging the narrative being presented about race relations in America.
Hmm.
Especially by Booker T. Washington.
Ah, Booker T. Washington, the renowned advocate for Black progress through vocational training and accommodation.
Exactly.
A controversial figure, even back then.
And this appeal to Europe was a direct rebuttal to his optimistic portrayal specifically aimed at an international audience.
Bold move.
It was published far and wide, stirring up controversy both within the Black community and among white commentators.
I bet. So what were the key points of contention in this appeal? What issues were they raising?
They laid out a pretty powerful list of grievances, disenfranchisement, unequal access to education segregation.
Mm.
The constant threat of violence. I mean, these were not minor complaints.
No.
These were systemic issues deeply embedded in American society.
Did they give any specific examples to support their claims?
Absolutely. For instance, they highlighted how Black men, even those with property and education,
right,
were being systematically denied the right to vote in many southern states. Meanwhile, the least educated white man,
yeah,
could cast a ballot with no problem.
A stark contrast indeed. How did white commentators react to these accusations?
Oh, there was a range of reactions. Some southern newspapers basically went on the attack.
Okay.
Labeling Dubois a social equality hunting fellow who was slandering his own country.
You can almost hear the venom in their words.
It's amazing how that phrase social equality was always used to shut down any conversation about racial justice.
Yeah.
It was like a dog whistle meant to stir up fear and resentment.
A recurring theme, for sure. But not everyone was so dismissive.
Right.
Some northern newspapers acknowledged the injustices faced by Black Americans.
Yeah, like the Buffalo Express, for example, pulled out the shameful record of wrongs committed against black citizens.
At least some voices were willing to acknowledge the truth.
It's a start.
Were there any attempts to defend segregation, even in the face of such overwhelming evidence?
Oh, absolutely. Some publications argue that segregation was just a natural solution, you know, even beneficial to deal with the so-called race problem.
It's astounding how they could twist logic to justify such blatant determination.
It really is.
It's disheartening to see how persistent these beliefs were, even in the face of reason and morality.
It wasn't just abstract debates happening in newspapers and magazines, though.
Right.
The crisis also covers the very real consequences of this segregationist ideology.
Like what kind of real-world impacts were they reporting on?
Well, they talk about Baltimore's attempt to segregate housing by race. Imagine being told where you could and couldn't live based solely on the color of your skin.
That's appalling. Such a blatant violation of basic freedoms. Did they mention how people's lives were affected by these policies?
They do. There's this heartbreaking story of a black woman who lost her job.
Oh, wow.
Simply because her employer didn't want someone living in a predominantly black neighborhood working in her home.
That's just gut-wrenching. It really underscores the human cost of discrimination, how it rips apart lives and communities.
It's a stark reminder that these weren't just political debates. They were about people's lives, their livelihoods, their very dignity.
Exactly.
And it wasn't without its opponents. The crisis mentions how some people, including a former U.S. Attorney General, spoke out against this ordinance.
Okay.
Arguing that it was a fundamental right to sell or rent your property to whomever you choose.
It's encouraging to see that there were voices of reason pushing back against these discriminatory measures.
Yeah.
It shows that even in those dark times, there were people willing to stand up for what was right. Did this debate about segregation lead to any broader discussions about the meaning of equality?
It did. In fact, the crisis even attempts to define what social equality actually means to black Americans.
That must have been a controversial topic at the time. What did they include in their definition?
It wasn't about fancy dinners or exclusive clubs. They were talking about fundamental rights.
Okay.
The right to vote, the right to a quality education, fair wages protection from violence.
Things that most people would consider essential to a just and equitable society.
Exactly. The irony is that the very people accusing them of demanding social equality were, in essence, arguing against these basic rights for black Americans.
The hypocrisy is astounding. It's a powerful reminder that language can be used to distort and manipulate, especially when it comes to issues of race and power.
Absolutely.
But it's not just the big issues, right? The crisis also offers these smaller, more intimate glimpses into the everyday challenges faced by black Americans.
Right. Beyond the political battles and legal challenges, there are these human stories that really bring the realities of the time to life.
What kind of stories? Give me some examples. I'm curious to hear how they experience these issues on a personal level.
For instance, there's this article by Jane Addams, the social reformer who founded Hull House in Chicago.
Yeah.
She talks about the lack of social support and control experienced by black communities in cities, especially those who had recently migrated from the South.
That's a fascinating perspective. It shows how even well-intentioned reformers could sometimes overlook the specific needs of black communities.
Right.
What other glimpses into daily life do we get from the crisis?
Well, there's this Kentucky newspaper that refused to use courtesy titles like Mrs. or Miss for black female teachers, even while using them for their white counterparts.
Wow, it's amazing how these little things can speak volumes about the underlying attitudes of the time.
It really does.
Did they share any positive stories, any moments of hope or triumph amidst all this struggle?
Oh, definitely. There's this incredibly touching poem, The Teacher, by Leslie Pinckney Hill.
Okay.
That celebrates the dedication and impact of black educators.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful tribute to their resilience and commitment, even in the face of such adversity.
A ray of light shining through the darkness.
You got it.
What else stands out? What other story caught your attention?
They also talk about a black postal worker who was denied membership in a previously integrated mutual benefit association.
Oh, wow.
Just another instance of discrimination seeping into everyday life.
A reminder that even seemingly mundane aspects of life were battlegrounds in the fight for equality.
Exactly.
It's exhausting just thinking about the constant vigilance required to navigate such a hostile world.
And then there's this investigation into the employment challenges faced by black women in Chicago.
Okay.
Noting how many were forced into domestic work despite having ambitions for higher education and professional careers.
A familiar story even today. The barriers to economic opportunity are often the most difficult to overcome.
Yeah.
Did the crisis offer any insights into how these barriers were perpetuated?
They share this particularly illuminating story about a successful black businessman.
Okay.
Who lost his property in a Virginia court simply because the opposing lawyer appealed to the jury's prejudice against smart black people.
It's incredible to think that all of this is contained in just one issue of a magazine from over a century ago.
Right.
This deep dive into the January 1911 edition of The Crisis has really painted a vivid picture of what life was like for Black Americans in the early 20th century. It's incredible to think that all of this is contained in just one issue of a magazine from over a century ago. This deep dive into the January 1911 edition of The Crisis has really painted a vivid picture of what life was like for Black Americans in the early 20th century.
It really has. We've gone from those local news snippets to international debates, legal battles, personal stories, all offering a multifaceted perspective on this really pivotal period in American history.
You started this deep dive hoping to understand the social and political landscape for Black Americans at the time, and I think it's safe to say we've accomplished that. We've seen their challenges, heard their voices, uncovered some truly remarkable stories.
It's been eye-opening, to say the least. It's made me think about, you know, the progress that has been made, but also the struggles that persist.
Exactly. It's impossible to ignore the parallels between the issues discussed in this 1911 magazine and the conversations we're still having today about equality, opportunity, basic rights.
It's a sobering reminder of how deeply ingrained these issues are in our society, but it's also inspiring to see the resilience and the determination of those who fought for change over a century ago, you know, paving the way for future generations.
And it leaves us with a lot to think about, doesn't it, after seeing all of this? What are your reflections on the journey we've taken through these pages? What resonates with you the most?
What strikes me is how The Crisis manages to capture both the despair and the hope, you know, the anger and the resilience of a community facing immense challenges.
Yeah.
It's a testament to the power of storytelling to connect us across generations and inspire us to keep fighting for a better world.
It's a reminder that even in the darkest of times, there's always hope, and that the stories we tell, the voices we amplify, can be powerful catalysts for change.
This deep dive into the January 1911 edition of The Crisis has been a journey through time, a glimpse into a pivotal moment in American history. It's been challenging, eye-opening, and ultimately incredibly inspiring.
And as we close this chapter, it's worth asking ourselves, what will our stories tell about this moment in time? What legacy will we leave for future generations?
That's a question worth pondering. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive. It's been an honor to explore these pages with you and uncover the voices and stories that shaped a nation.